Good evening. Welcome to the 2017 Annual Wrap-Up Equity Overview. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm going to be drawing from a wealth of resources that we've provided. Let me go through them. You may want to have them up at various times as I'm talking. First of all, the web presentation for the annual wrap-up, you can link to it from the commentary on the homepage. If you look at the financial markets section, we have the charts for 2017, and you can get a very good assessment of things. I'm going to be talking about the different sectors, so you may want to look at those charts. You certainly can give it a good skim anytime at your leisure. Then you can see linked next to it is the Rambus Chartology. Rambus has done an annual review very focused on both the U.S. and world equity markets. And as always, it's extraordinary. There are two stories in the part one of the News Trends and Stories. Number four, the BRICS build independent systems, and number seven, on the bull market in equities. And there, I'm going to be referring to some of the links there. And I think both of those are very much worth looking at and exploring some of the links, particularly in seven, if you're interested in the equity markets. And then the other section in the web presentation is the 2018 Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready. That's our scenario section. And I'll be talking through the scenarios later. We have if you're not familiar with scenario thinking or scenario planning, we have a great Solari report called Scenario Thinking with Eric Best, and that will introduce you to scenario planning. I'm a great believer that the future can't be predicted, but what we can do is we can allocate our time and resources and be prepared for any reasonable scenario, and that's the way to be resilient and be prepared to rock and roll with what happens. And finally, we did a precious metals market with report with Franklin that's posted on the website. We took his charts and put it to a video, and so you can access that at the commentary on the homepage. So financial market charts on the web presentation, Rambus Chartology, you can link from the web presentation, News Trends and Stories Part 1, Numbers 4 and 7, then also in the web presentation, the scenarios, Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready, and then the video with Franklin on the commentary for precious metals. So what happened in 2017? First of all, for the first time since the summer of 2015, the dollar wasn't strong. It was down 9% in 2017 after 2.5 of very strong years. It's been trading below the 92 line. I don't think it's going to break the 92 line, but if it does break the 92 line, there really is no meaningful support down before 80. And if we get a breakdown to 80, we're in a whole new environment. Franklin and I talk a little bit about it during the precious metals market report. That relates to interest rates. We had a nice long talk in 2016 about the fact that I believe 2016 marked the end of the 35-year bond bull market. This is major because it means the end of the debt growth model, and the debt growth model is what has financed governments growing and growing and centralizing and subsidizing a corporate model for quite some time. Now, it may have been the end in 2016, but we didn't see a lot of interest rates rose, but not significantly, and seemed to plateau during 2017. Of course, the big concern is how will we feel in 2018 as interest rates go up, and are they going to go up slow or fast? Clearly, the Federal Reserve intends to bump them, and you see announcements both from the ECB and the Fed that they're planning on shrinking their balance sheet back. And how exactly they're going to accomplish that has yet to be determined. Now, the history of the equity markets is 150 basis point rise in interest rates a year the equity markets are able to digest. More than that, you run into problems. And, of course, you can run into commodities and across the board. Remember, if rates rise, it raises the cost of every product and every service in the economy, and the cost of capital for every person, every company, every government. So this is something that hits multiple parts of your financial statement and balance sheet across the economy. Now, there are several theories on how much interest rates could rise. Slow and steady is what the central banks would like to do. The problem is if the United States really runs into trouble with foreigners not wanting to hold dollars and treasuries, not wanting to get debased anymore, and you start to get a real break in the dollar, then interest rates are going to have to take a primary seat to protect the fixed income markets, and equities could suffer as a result. We see that China just dropped, one of their leading rating agencies just dropped treasuries from an A- to a BBB, and we've had numerous rumors that China was considering halting treasury purchases. China has later denied this, but the rumors are certainly in the market. The challenge is so much of the U.S. economy depends on government purchases, government contracts, government subsidies. And so it's very, foreigners holding dollars in treasuries are concerned about debasement in value, particularly with tax reform passing and real indication of bigger deficits ahead. This is why the new administration has been so aggressive and, in fact, has done a remarkable job of the risk-averse strategy, which is reshoring capital, bringing capital and operations back to the U.S., trying to decrease the criminal elements internally, and then encouraging the heartland to basically go back to work, slowing down new regulation, killing things like Common Core. These are all designed to help kickstart productivity in a variety of ways. There is a perfect indication. There's 75 million people in this country on Medicaid. That's an extraordinary number, and the administration has just indicated to Kentucky, who's first out of the box, that they can start to require community service or various kinds of contributions, work contributions, in exchange for remaining on Medicaid. What you're watching, and you see it in Washington, is a switch from a world where there's a 0% cost of capital to the federal government to a world where there is a 10 to 20% cost of capital. And so you see a private entrepreneur coming in from the real estate industry with a much higher and much more valuable cost of capital, trying to introduce that concept to a culture that's used to zero cost of capital. And when you have a zero cost of capital, you can afford to be very polite and gracious and fashionable and a whole lot of other things, while $21 trillion is going out the back door of HUD and DOD. So part of that is the culture clash that we're watching, but it's really a model of, are we going to run the economy over government debt versus equity model? And in fact, with the debt growth model over, that's what the German finance minister said, there are no reforms that aren't real reforms. So fixed income market has got a lot of challenges to work through, because you've got significant debt and there is not enough productive capacity to support that debt, particularly if interest rates rise. Equities, I've talked a lot for the last 5 or 6 years about a crash-up scenario, and it certainly looks like what we've got. Rambus has done an excellent job of looking at both the U.S. and the foreign equity markets. It's really a remarkable Rambus chartology. If you enjoy technical analysis or just like to look at the long-term price histories, Rambus chartology is really extraordinary technical analysis. And if you haven't discovered him and his website, I can't recommend it enough. He's really the best technical analyst I've ever found or worked with. He's just a gifted natural, and he's attracted a great group of subscribers who participate on his website. And I just find it remarkable analytics and very, very useful. But one of the things Rambus really stresses is the long-term primary trends, and he keeps coming back to the fact, and has for quite a long time, that the equity markets are clearly in a long-term bull, and I agree. Now, if you look at what the markets did in 2017, it's pretty simple. Basically, the S&P up 20%, Europe up about 25%, and the emerging markets in China up anywhere from 35 to almost 40%. So emerging markets clearly outperformed the U.S. But if you go back to the bottom of the equity markets when they bottomed during the financial crisis in early 2009, since then the S&P is up 226%. Emerging markets up 121%, so half of the S&P. Europe up 79%. The developed markets minus North America up 85%. India up 129%. China large caps up 91%. So clearly, the foreign markets have lagged the S&P since 2009 over the last 8 years very, very significantly. And it's one of the reasons why if you look at some of the pieces that I posted in story number 7 for part 1 in News Trends and Stories on the bull market in equities, the real stress from a variety of sources is that future returns look much better buying into the emerging markets in Europe relative to the U.S. because valuations are so high. Now, the problem, and you've heard me say this many times, is that if you look at the normal cycles of how often a bull market gets corrections, anywhere from a shallow correction, which is really 5 to 10%, or a major correction, 15 to 25%, we are years overdue for that kind of correction. And of course, many investors are sitting around saying, how can we not get it? It's absurd. Now, the reality is you have so much intervention of governments, government purchases, governments doing things that prop up corporations, corporation profits, that we really kind of have been in this, in what I call the stairway to heaven. It looks like a corporate methadone program. But of course, a correction would be very healthy and is long overdue. So the problem for investors is even if we are in a bull market, how do you deal with the possibility of a meaningful correction, let alone, because it means you've got to go down more than 25% to really discover if you're in a bear market or not, because you're so high. Precious metals look very good. Franklin and I talk about it in the precious metals market report. We had the first double-digit year in terms of return for gold since 2010. I've stressed all throughout this period, always have your core position. But if we do get a breakout over 1350 precious metals for the first time in 5 years, I could be saying it looks like a good investment opportunity. The BRICS Gold Trading Network, which I talk about in the story number 4 on BRICS Build Independent Systems in part 1 of News Trends and Stories. Again, I would check out the links in both part 4 and part 7. But the BRICS are building a gold trading system. Yuan is coming out with an oils future, the China coming out with an oil future tied back to gold. If you look at all the different systems in China and Russia that they're building, to me, it's good for gold. I think 2018 is going to be the year the government start to really jump in and regulate cryptocurrencies now that they've seen how they've given in sort of the prototype period. But watch Russia and China come out with cryptocurrencies backed by gold. Then the games really begin. Both Russia and China central banks are approaching 2,000 tons of gold. Now, that's a much bigger percent of total reserves for Russia than China. Russia's been steadily growing, not just its total reserves, but the percentage of its total foreign reserves, if you will, that are central bank reserves that are in gold. I got a note from Daniel Estulin today. Catherine, something else I wanted to mention. Russia, as you know, keeps increasing its physical gold purchases. What most people do not know is that one-third of that gold is stored in the USA. With the U.S. government threatening to sanction Russia, this gold might well be seized. We recently saw this with Kazakhstan. If this happens, one of the new candidates who represents apparently Communist Party, but in reality is a representative of intelligence structures that if U.S. confiscates Russia's assets, quote, we are going to war, he has a good chance to come in second in the upcoming elections on March 18th and be the next president when Putin leaves his post in a couple of years. So the gold issues continue to be sensitive. Remember, that's the big question on Libya, who got the gold. Commodities are coming off the floor. They've had quite a rough couple of years. We clearly came out of the commodity super cycle. Interestingly enough, even though commodities were down last year, global food prices were up 8%, and that's despite low interest rates, low commodity prices, and low energy prices. So you can imagine if all those things turn, imagine what it could do to food prices, which is going to be a real political hot potato. If you haven't taken a look at last year's annual wrap-up on the global harvest, it is a great read to get a perspective on the role of food in the global economy and how much more important it could become. I really recommend that if you haven't had a chance to look at it yet. One important thing to point out about the equity markets that I want to talk about is that securities continue to outperform the GMP. It's not just the equity markets, bonds as well. And corporate stocks continue to outperform the GNP a lot. There was a, as I said in story number 7 and in part 1 of News Trends and Stories, there's some great links. A couple of them are to newsletters from Jeremy Grantham, who's one of the most respected investment advisors. Let me just read you what he said. I used as his quote in the annual wrap-up. The general pattern described so far is entirely compatible with increased monopoly power for U.S. corporations. Put this way, if they had materially more monopoly power, we would expect to see exactly what we do see. Higher profit margins, increased reluctance to expand capacity, slight reductions in GDP growth and productivity, pressure on wages, unions, and labor negotiation, and fewer new entrants into the corporate world and a declining number of increasingly large corporations. And because these factors affect the U.S. more than other developed countries, U.S. margins should be higher than theirs. It is a global system, and we outbrand them for one thing. Very astute comment from Jeremy Grantham. One that I tweeted out not that long ago was the JANA hedge fund and CalSTRS pension fund expressed their concerns to Apple about the fact that iPhones were addictive to children. And one of the shareholders, who's chief executive of a wealth and investment management firm in Santa Monica, came out and said, quote, "We invest in things that are addictive. Addictive things are very profitable." So again, what we're talking about is corporations, what's good for corporations not being good for the whole. And this sort of non-alignment between what's propping up the stock market and the health of the general population and the general economy is not only a very important issue, but getting bigger. If you look at the links I posted in story number 7, it's amazing to me that all the top investment advisors are finally beginning to face the fact that too much is rigged through government and it's not healthy for everybody. I wanted to just run in this vein through the sources to give you a sense of how incredibly dependent corporate finances are on government and military and the extraordinary dependency of U.S., the big U.S. companies on the dollar. I wanted to give you a sense. So let's run through the revenues, expenses, and then the PE balance sheet and the risk of different, basically the corporate establishment. So revenues are highly dependent for many companies on government contracts, government purchases, and regulations supporting monopolies, what some investors call high moat. That includes enforcement, getting rid of your competitors. That was one of the things that happened to Hamilton Securities. We were deemed to be a competitor, and so send in the Department of Justice, the Sheriff of Nottingham, to get rid of your competitors. The global presence is supported by military and intelligence presence, intervention and intelligence. And then, of course, in the revenues category, you have to include money laundering. The U.S. is the largest money launderer. We're the number one in the world for what is now, I'm sure, more than $1 trillion a year. Expenses, we enjoy very low energy costs because there's been such a commitment to energy self-sufficiency. Global labor deflation has benefited from the competition as a result of globalization. I was trying to get my subscribers to watch the Sir James Goldsmith video on globalization, and he describes how insane this policy of defeating competing labor globally has been. expenses are benefited by low interest rates. That's been the central bank policies to bring the interest rates down is really a subsidy both to government and big corporations. And then, of course, low commodity prices, which are very much made available as a result of military and intelligence presence and intervention all around the world. PE, another way of saying PE is the price-earnings ratio, but another way of saying cost of capital, benefits from low interest rates. We've seen the stock market very much supported by stock buybacks by corporations who are financing it with cheap debt. So they're issuing cheap debt, using the money to turn around and buy their stock. And the high PEs, of course, lead to a high stock market. And that stock market is very much supported by purchases of central banks, sovereign wealth funds, and government pension funds. So we've seen globally a real commitment of governments to basically buy and finance the stock market. And if you count all sovereign wealth funds, all central banks, all government pension funds or government-related pension funds, you know, more than 50% of the stock market now is basically owned by the government. I mentioned stock buybacks, but central bank interventions have been very important. And, of course, then federal credit support and bailouts. So if you look at federal credits, anything from FDIC insurance to mortgage insurance, on and on and on. And then, of course, the bailouts were tremendous largesse. And then balance sheets depend on government privatizations at below market prices. And finally, risk issues, you know, too big to fail. So if you basically run through all these different factors throughout the finances, what you realize is that this is an extraordinary amount of support coming directly or indirectly from the central bank and the government. And if that game should turn for some reason related to a collapse of the dollar, it's gonna wreak havoc with the big guys. There's no doubt about it. The bottom line is, if you let's turn and go through the markets, sort of look at what's ahead for 2018. The bottom line is the chart on the U.S. dollar is very weak. We dipped through the 92 line. I don't think we're almost back up to 92. I don't think we're going to break the 92 line. If we do break the 92 line, and we could drop pretty far down to 80 pretty quickly. There are a lot of fear porn scenarios running around that I think are highly unlikely. Of course, anything could happen in this environment, but the chance that we get a really serious breakdown in the dollar this year or a collapse of the dollar, I think, is unlikely. Unless, of course, anything is possible if the right political players decide to make it happen, which is possible. But again, I don't see it as a high percentage chance. Some of the biggest risks are environmental problems, whether it's Fukushima, the global spraying, the bees, or of course war. And I would include what we've seen on the North America continent. You know, I would describe weather warfare in Houston and the Puerto Rico and the Caribbean and thermal warfare in California as being those risks. So I think the biggest risks are environmental and war. Interest rates headed up probably by 100 basis points is, I think, what the Fed's going to target. But figure 50 to 75 basis points. Global demographics and global dollar borrowings argue for continued life for the dollar for some time, and interest rates not flying up as much as you think. But again, as I said, politics are fluid. And if it has to support keeping the dollar stronger and keeping treasury holdings happening around the world, if the Fed's forced to raise interest rates to defend the fixed income markets, sacrificing the stock market, it will. Our big risk is we break the 92 line, the dollar breaks down to 80, and if it breaks down even below that, we're in trouble. So the two things to watch this year for real signals are the U.S. dollar index and interest rates. Fixed income, I think the bond bull ended in 2016. I'm, other than very high quality short term for situations where you need to really protect principal, or a small allocation for deflationary scenarios, I'm basically moving away from the fixed income market. If you look at where we were 20 or 30 years ago, if you wanted to be really conservative, you could be careful and stay in the fixed income market. You can't be conservative and stay in the fixed income market these days. There's just too many liquidity and credit problems. So I would be very, very careful about what you do in fixed income. Equities, every chart says bull market. Everyone. The problem is the U.S. market is very high and very overbought relative to the emerging or the European markets. If you look at the links in story number 7 in part 1 of Trends, News Trends and Stories, there's a great piece by Grantham colleague James Montier and some other points by Grantham, but both of them are right. Foreign stocks look much more attractive today. Now, I think the U.S. leaders would say, look, if you look at all the moves we're making with tax reform and pulling money back and playing Fortress America, U.S. is going to be stronger than ever. Maybe, maybe not. But it's very high to buy into the high PEs at this point. Now, my way of coping with a high market or a high PE market is to stay hedged, not hedge as in hedge fund, hedged as in buying puts to protect from a drop. So hedges allows me to stay invested, get the dividend. If we get a 15 to 25% correction, I can sell the hedge, buy more stocks at the perfect time. And if we drop further, if we go to a bear market, I can go to cash and stay in short-term high-quality fixed income until the bear is over. So I would now you give up a lot. If you look at the last 2 years, we've given up sort of half of the market returns by paying for the hedge. But I just feel very uncomfortable about where we're levitating, and given all the risk in the environment, I would rather stay invested. I'd rather be in a hedged equity than in a bond. So I'd rather stay invested, get the dividend, maybe get a small amount of capital gains, and give up higher returns in exchange for protecting on that downside. But again, if we get a 15 to 25% correction, then there's a real argument for coming out of the hedge and going long. I'm finally going to launch 2 screens in the first quarter as part of my work as an investment advisor. They're called Solari World and Solari Space, and they really reflect the areas that I want to focus on. The Solari World is global stocks. Again, I think two things. I think the real opportunity is in the emerging markets and international. But I also think we're moving to a world where you want to buy the best company at the best price, no matter where it is, and many companies are going to be everywhere. Solari World is by and large a hedge portfolio, and then the other one, Solari Space, I believe there are two very strong primary trends. One is the rise of the Asian consumer, and the other is space. And so I just have a lot of confidence in, I like investing with the primary trends. So you'll hear more about that when we announce it later in the first quarter. Anyway, I would encourage you to go back for equities and take a good look at the links we provided in story number 4 and story number 7 in News Trends and Stories Part 1. Number 4 is the BRICS Build Independent Systems, and you can see it's still small and early, but we're talking about trends that are going to grow and balloon and put tremendous pressure on the dollar at some point. And number 7 is links about the equity markets and some very good pieces there. Scenarios. 2018, get ready, get ready, get ready. We have, I did a very serious scenario planning last year, and I'm working off the scenarios I did then. For many, many years, I said, look, it's just going to slow burn. And then last year, I said, all bets are off. And boy, did that turn out to be true. I said, we're going into controlled demolitions. You know, Puerto Rico is a good example of a controlled demolition. That's not a slow burn. That's they didn't even wait to restructure the debt. They just declared war. So the variables I used for our 2017 scenarios were political and economic alignment. It could be unipolar versus multipolar. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at the elections, the team that wanted to sort of play, you know, let's bring things back to the North America and make sure we're, you know, we've got a strong risk-averse defense, one. But if you look at what they're doing with the military budgets and military policy, they're planning on doing everything they can to continue the unipolar world as long as they can while they're building up in North America. Reminds me of one of my favorite stories in the Bible from Nehemiah. They got a weapon in one hand and a tool in another. But it means they're going to stretch the deficit and the budget very, very far. So the second variable was return on investment to taxpayers, positive or negative. There was great hope upon listening to the new administration that they were going to really try and turn investment positive. Doesn't look like there's any chance of that. You know, we are in full blossom mode to basically subsidize the corporate model. So now, you know, this is only after the first year. There may be, there is some indication that you're trying to introduce the notion of cost of capital and get things more economic. But so far, I would say that there's no indication that we are aggressively turning to a positive return on investment to taxpayers. So that breaks out into four scenarios. You can read them at Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready. I changed them from last year. Last year, the first scenario was popsicle index rising, which is you shift to a multipolar world and you get a positive return on investment to taxpayers. I think the chances of that happening have diminished tremendously. So it's dropped from 30% chance to 10%. The second scenario was where you get a negative return on investment. That I took the 20 points from scenario number one and moved them to scenario number two. It's called Global Musical Chairs. And I said a commitment to human values, environmental stewardship, and market economics are constrained by failure of national and global cooperation. This results in continued high levels of debt, military expenditures, and disaster capitalism, which is exactly what we're experiencing. So that gets a 60% weighting. Scenario number three was mind control. That gets a 20% weighting. And scenario number four, the war machine, gets a 10%. Both of those are unipolar model. And even though I think we're committed to trying to keep the unipolar model going as long as we can, I don't see it happening. So what does this mean to you? If you go look at each one of the scenarios on the web presentation, I go into the specifics of what you want to do for your positions and in each one. But I think it's very clear that we're going to be in global musical chairs for a while here. So let me just talk through the different asset categories. It's very clear this is an environment where you want to keep your risk low, and one way to do that is pay off your debt. Keep your debt low, low or as low as possible. You certainly do not want variable rate debt, because with interest rates rising, you could absolutely get clocked. I've talked a lot in the Salier Report in 2017 about the importance of taking care of your health, of having intellectual mastery of how to navigate both natural and traditional health systems, and having practitioners and a health support system in place which you can trust. I continue to see people be financially destroyed and physically destroyed by not having the right resources and not having the kind of intellectual investment they need in how to take care of their own health to the extent they can. So this is a very important area, and a very important area to your finances. I think there's going to be the U.S. health system is going to continue to be more and more challenged. For those of you who are in Europe or in Australia, New Zealand, you're in a much better condition, but it will apply to you as well. I think it's exceptionally important in this environment to continually invest in your skills and in creating, for the entrepreneurs who are listening, multiple sources of income. Stay involved, stay useful, be necessary. In the United States, because of the money repatriating, there's a real mismatch between corporations. You know, they have tremendous needs for labor that they can't fill. And so you're going to see them doing more and more apprentice ship work and training. And so there'll be more opportunity, particularly for people who have 3.0 skills or want to build global 3.0 skills. Banks, I'm getting a lot of questions again about banks. I think, again, this is the fear porn. I'm not concerned at all about a really good, well-capitalized bank, as long as you're within the FDIC limits. We had a first quarter wrap-up in 2016 called Where to Stash Your Cash, and it's as relevant now as it was then, so I would encourage you to get it. The problem with holding money in banks is if we get the kind of inflation that we had last year, and I'm expecting this year, if not greater, dollars are going to be debased. So I don't think you want a lot of money sitting around cash. You certainly do want some money outside of the bank sitting around in cash for emergencies. I always tell my subscribers, make sure you have cash and provision so you can go 3 months if you get, you know, if Katrina or the Kentucky power outage or any of these crazy things happen where you are, you just want to make sure you're protected. Bonds, I'm staying away from the fixed income markets except for high quality, short duration fixed income. And part of having that is to protect against a deflationary scenario, which again could happen. Commodities, please be prepared for inflation, and there's a chance it could be significant, depending on what happens to the dollars. Remember, commodities up good for the emerging markets. Dollar down means we're going to pay more. Real estate, it depends on where you are and what kind of real estate it is. Residential is probably going to protect against inflation in some areas. Is going to grow and rise more than inflation, particularly as people try and find ways of getting dollar into something that will. Commercial is going to be under a lot of stress because of interest rates. If interest rates raise fast enough, it could also put a strain on the residential as well. Equities continue in a bull. All signs are we're in a bull market, but of course you have to be prepared for corrections even in a bull. And if you can live with the volatility and the currency and other issues, consider international and foreign, but also consider hedged if you don't like living with what could be a meaningful correction if we get it. Cryptocurrencies, this is going to be the year the government regulation starts to put a kibosh on the sort of Wild West aspects of this market. Watch for the first sovereign governments to try and back one with gold or to do a sovereign cryptocurrency. I don't think we'll see a big kibosh this year. Yes, they'll move in. Yes, they'll have regulations. But if you look at who is using when I talked with Dr. Farrell on News Trends and Story, he said this cryptocurrencies was Hitler's wet dream, infinite amount of money for secret armies. And if you look at what I believe the intelligence agencies are doing to use Bitcoin to launder money to activists who run around the country during the campaign, in a million years, I don't think they're going to give that up. So I just don't see the kibosh being too hard, too fast in 2018. Here are some of your big risks in 2018. Shadow work. I wrote a piece in 2015 called Shadow Work. You can find it doing a search. But I think there are going to be many institutions, many people who can't handle the inflation. They can't handle the controlled demolitions and changes in the environment. If we get meaningful increases in interest rates, they can't handle that. There's a combination of things. And so it's why you want to stick with very high integrity institutions and providers and just be very, very careful about having excess capacity to be able to rock and roll and the people around you, family, friends, run into real problems. There are too many weaknesses in the system that are hiccuping people. So take a look at shadow work. I think shadow work is going to be a real big issue, risk issue. It has been for the last couple of years, and I think 2018 is going to be worse. The second thing is environmental pollution. One of the things coming up is the 5G rollout, which is going to start in the denser places this year, and of course, continued spraying. And I'm getting lots of feedback from around the world of real concerns about what 5G and continued spraying means in different places where it's it's either very dense or expected to be dense. Small risk, but real. I think the chances, again, that we get the rug pulled out from under the dollar this year are relatively small, not to say that we couldn't have a real weak dollar year. Whenever the dollar spirals down, if you're in the United States, it means high inflation. But if we get somebody or something pulling the rug, if the politics pull the rug out of the dollar globally, again, I don't think there's a big chance you can get hyperinflation. But back to scenario planning, I want you to plan out in your mind how you're going to deal with a scenario like that, because then you don't have to worry about it. So what we're talking about is very high percentage of inflation, and the question is it going to be a little bit of inflation? Is it going to be a lot of inflation? But you need to be prepared to deal wherever it hits on the curve, a little bit or a lot. But to me, that's our risk. Our risk is not the banks collapse, none of the fear poor scenarios. Those are very small percentages. Our risk is an acceleration of the slow burn, which is really inflation. And depending on your unique circumstances, the controlled demolitions could hit you, whether it's your pension fund getting cut, or your company getting cut. Again, we're going to see a lot of controlled demolition as institutions struggle to change in this environment. What will happen is, if you're in America, you're going to be the beneficiary of a lot of capital rolling back in, a lot of corporations trying to move operations back in, and that's going to create economic activity, particularly in the areas that are the beneficiaries. Of course, that's not all good if they want you out of the way. Of course, when you see what happened, I believe, in Santa Rosa. So it's very particular to your situation in place. But your risk is going to be inflation, whether it's a little bit of inflation each year for the next 20 years or hyperinflation if we get that outlier scenario. This is an environment that requires you, because we're having so much change, it really requires you to have a vision of what you're about and where you want to go. And you need to keep building forward no matter, this is an environment that calls for and rewards enormous persistence. You need to look at and manage your risk, but don't let it put you in a state of fear or incoherence. And that's very easy to have happen. You know, I'm always saying it, but I'm always struggling with it personally. So, just never, ever quit. And it also calls for a high learning metabolism. When you have this much change, you really have to have be able to pick up and learn new skills. The tools will be changing. And so the guy who keeps learning and picking up new skills and new tools is the guy who succeeds. The last thing I want to say, whenever I finish this Solari report, I always say, if you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. This is an environment, and part of this is high learning speed. This is an environment that favors the team, not the lone wolf. One of the quotes I use in the wrap-up is from Ned Stark, who's one of the characters in Game of Thrones, and he talks about to his daughter about what happens when winter comes, and he says, quote, "When the snows fall and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives." And you see later in the series his two daughters quoting that back again. "When the snow falls and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives." So this is an environment that favors conspiring with others. So you need to find others who are interested in taking action together and protecting each other and getting going. So again, vision, building forward, enormous persistence, high learning metabolism. and co-conspirators. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish you good fortune and good hunting in 2018. Good night and good luck.